that we are behind time. Got the video. Right, there's too much sunshine here where I am. Let me officially open the meeting. Welcome, honorable members of the committee SCOF. Welcome, GIPA. And welcome the board and executives of GEPF, stakeholders who are in the platform, National Treasury, all entities in Parliament, including the PBO, the Legal Division, Communications. Welcome stakeholders who are in attendance. Yeah, you're all welcome. Roll call and apologies.
Good morning, sir. We have an apology from Dr. George and Ms. Abram.
Okay, those are the two apologies. Honorable members, I'm pleading that when it's Tuesday and Wednesday, let's prioritize the committee business that by 9 o'clock we should have logged in. We don't have to call whips of committees to look for you. Please, let's prioritize the committee business so that we correct in time and finish in time for you to prepare for other activities of Parliament. Let's move to item three, briefing by GEPF on the annual report. I'm not sure whether it's the chairperson or the member of the board who's leading the team who will start and hand over to the executive. Over to you, GEPF.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope I'm audible, that's right, to all the members of the committee.
We can hear you. But we can't see you. Can you put on your video? Because we have got live streaming of, what do they call it?
Sorry, Chair. Okay, thank you.
The media will want to see you.
Okay. thank you, Chair. Let me thank SCOF for welcoming us to this particular meeting. I'm Eddie Kekana. I'm the deputy chairperson of the fund, the Government Employees Pension Fund. I'm here with the GEPF delegation, led, of course, by the principal executive officer, Mr. Musa Mabesa. We have the head of Actuarial and Benefits Administration, Mr. Brian Kareza. We also have the head of corporate services, Ms. Bulelwa Kota, Portia Mgomezulu, and we have the head of finance, Ms. Bulelwa Kota, and we also have the head of investments, Mr. Sefiso Sebeya, and we also have the head for stakeholder management and communications, Mr. Babs Naidu, and we also have the company secretary, Ms. Adre van Niekerk, in our midst. We are, as this particular team, going to present to you this particular report, and the whole report is going to be led by the PEO, Mr. Musa Mabesa. I will then hand over, and maybe before we even start presenting, let me upfront indicate the apology from the chairperson of the board who could not be with us. Is currently out of the country on work assignments. So I'm standing in for him today. That's why I'm here. Thank you, Chair. Can I please, through you, request the PEO to take us through the GEPF presentation?
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to yourself and the committee members. I am Musama Besa, as introduced by the Chair of Deputy Chair of the GPF Board. I will take you through the highlights of the GPF 2020-21 annual report, so the financial performance as well as the significant performance against the objectives of the board, as well as the outcomes of the 2021 actuarial valuation, as well as the work that we're doing on unclaimed benefits. Chair, that the page that we're on now demonstrates the significant growth that the GEPF has achieved over the 25 years since 1996, when the GEPF was established, from 127 billion in assets to 2.1 trillion rand in as of 2021 March. And that's an audited figure that demonstrates the resilience of the fund, as well as the sustainable assets that we have under management. That's the closing value of our assets as of 31 March 2021. At the high level, who is the GEPF? The GEPF is established by the Government Employees Pension Law of 1996. We had 1.265 million members as at 31 March 2021, that was audited, and 473,000 pensioners and spouse beneficiaries. And as already mentioned, we had 2.1, just shy of 2.1 trillion of assets under management. Who and what does the GEPF do? The objective of the GEPF, the primary objective, is to provide pensions and other related benefits as determined in the GEP law to our members, pensioners, and their beneficiaries. We manage and administer these pensions and related benefits on behalf of government employees in South Africa. What we do is to invest the funds that we collect as contributions from active members. And on a monthly basis, we pay the monthly pensions to pensioners, and we also pay the monthly child pensions to qualifying child pensioners. We also pay spouses' pensions to those that qualify as spouses' pensioners. We also pay funeral and resignation benefits as determined by the GEP law. And all these benefits are detailed in the GEP law. Next slide, Audrey. Thanks. The governance of the fund, the government employees pension fund is governed by the Board of Trustees, and the Board of Trustees is made up of subcommittees, which are detailed on the screen. Firstly, we have got a Benefits and Administration Committee, which looks after matters related to benefits and the administration of the fund from a benefits and related benefits perspective. And there's a chair of that committee as nominated by the board. Thereafter, there's a finance and audit committee that looks after the finance, risk, audit, as well as the ICT governance aspect of the fund, supported by a valuation subcommittee. And this valuation subcommittee looks after valuation of unlisted investments of the fund, which is a huge component of our annual financial statements. We also have a governance and legal committee that takes care of the governance-related matters of the fund, as well as all legal-related matters and oversees litigation matters for the fund, including those that are outsourced to both the GIPA and the PIC on behalf of the GEPF. Supporting the governance and legal committee is a social and ethics subcommittee, which also looks at social and ethics matters which are important to the fund from a governance perspective. That committee also has a chairperson as delegated by the board. We also have an investment committee that provides oversight over the investments of the GEPF. It's chaired by a chairperson and supported by specialists as well, amongst other trustees on the GEPF board. And oversight over the investment, largely managed by the PIC, is conducted through this committee, and the committee also serves as an advisory board on behalf of the board.
Last but not least, we have a remuneration committee that looks after all the HR and remuneration related affairs of the fund. Next slide. Still on the governance aspect, I've indicated that the Board of Trustees is an executive authority of the fund. And then we have equal representation of members and employers on the board. And the makeup of the 16-member board is that there are 8 employer representatives. The GEP law specifies that the Minister of Finance will consult with 5 other ministers that are the largest employers within government. And the Minister of Finance will then also provide 3 other nominees that will represent the employer, and they should also, 2 of these, or at least 1 of these, would have expertise in finance and or investments, and that makes up the 8 employer representatives. And then the other 8 employee representatives, 6 are employee representatives that come from the Public Sector Coordinating Bargaining Council, so that would be a process followed by the PSCBC. And then through an election process, there's a pensioner representative where pensioners would elect a representative amongst themselves. And then from the forces and intelligence community, there will be an election of a representative. And in total, that makes up the 16-member board. So it's a balanced board in that regard. Next slide. In terms of the operating model, so as indicated, the GEPF Board of Trustees is responsible for the overall management of the fund. The GEPF then outsourced the benefits administration of the fund to the GEPA, the Government Pension Administration Agency, as you see depicted on the right. So the fund benefits administrator is the GEPA, and that relationship is governed through an administration agreement as well as a service level agreement. Whereas on the left-hand side, the investments of the fund are largely outsourced to the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, and the relationship is governed through an investment agreement and mandate. The board has also delegated the authority to the principal executive officer, who is then supported by the executives that the deputy chair has introduced, and they're listed on that screen. And through these executives, we have also appointed other service providers that are crucial in the management of the fund. For example, the law requires that we have an actuary, an evaluator of the fund appointed at all times. So we have evaluator and actuaries retained at all times. At the moment, we have Alexander Forbes, who are our current actuaries. We have to have external auditors appointed at all times, as well as a panel of legal service providers and investment and asset consultants that are necessary in support of the fund. Next slide. Okay. So in terms of the financial context on the performance of the fund, the GEPF performs in both a global and SA economic environment. Because of our exposure to a local economic environment, as well as our offshore exposure. We did see a recovery in the global equity investment market following the dip in 2020, going to the March 2020 year end due to COVID, as well as the collapse in the global markets, as well as the domestic markets. There was also a rebound in the market, I think 3 months into the 2020-21 financial year. By June 2020, the market had recovered, and all the losses that we had suffered going into March 2020, we had made up for those losses. The negative performance in the unlisted and property portfolio continued into the 2020-21 financial year. And I think the unlisted portfolio or unlisted market was the hardest hit by the COVID pandemic, because that took long to recover, as opposed to the listed markets, which were very quick to recover. And that's where we realized significant gains and recovery. the low inflation and interest rate environment also contributed to the performance of the fund. And we've had to adapt to the new operating environment within COVID-19, which has had both positives and negatives. We've noted the impact on livelihoods. And also when we go into our actuarial valuation, we'll note what impact that has also had on the fund itself. Next slide. Okay, the financial highlights for the fund. For the year ended March 2021, we paid 111 billion rand in benefits, with the fund closing with assets under management of 2.1 trillion rand, and that was a significant uptick of 27.5% in the growth of our investment portfolio from the previous year, after we suffered devastation in the value of our assets from about 1.85 trillion to 1.65 trillion in the previous financial year. The average growth in our reserves over a 10-year period was 8.9%. That was from 2010 to around 2021. Our return on investment for the year ended March 2021 was 23.1% under those difficult circumstances. And that is equivalent to 484 billion rand in net investment income. So that is significant for us under those difficult circumstances. Next slide. Okay. Our assets, as already indicated, grew over the last 10 years from 1 trillion and 30 in 2012 to 2 trillion and 41 in 2021. And that shows you that average of 8.9% average growth over the 10-year period, which is testament to our robust investment strategies that are driven by the liability-driven investment strategy that the board has employed over the years. And as a long-term investor, as a defined benefit fund, this works for us, and it tells you that the fund is sustainable and will remain sustainable going into the future. Next slide. The growth in the investment portfolio, this is also linked to the previous slide. I've already indicated that we had a 27.5% increase in the investment portfolio, which is equivalent to 451 billion rand. And this is largely attributable to the listed equities markets, as well as the bond portfolios and the collective investment schemes. I think that's on the next slide, where we highlight the contributors to those to the increase. Yeah, the listed equities contributed 44% to that growth, that significant growth in the financial year, followed by domestic bills and bonds that gave us a 19% increase. The unlisted equities, as highlighted, had a negative contribution towards the growth of the fund, with a minus 4% contribution to the overall growth of the fund. And collective investment schemes, and this is foreign collective investment schemes, added a 24% overall growth to the fund. So our diversification in the foreign portfolio also yielded positive results for the fund. Next slide. Okay, there is a return on investment. I did highlight that going into the 2020 financial year, the global market crash towards 2020, March 2020, and the advent of COVID, we had a negative 11.2% drop in our return on investment. I think the entire economy had that crash, but then we had a significant recovery in 2021, where we had the 23.1% yield that we achieved. So that was a significant recovery for the fund, and that's again because of the robust strategies. We did not react to that global crisis that happened in 2020, because we are again a long-term investor, and we don't tweak our investment strategies because of short-term shocks to the market. Next slide. Moving on to contributions received and accrued, and now this is on the benefits side. Our contributions received for the year ended 31 March 2021 were 82 billion rand, with a slight increase from March 2020. For the year ended March 2020, that was 81 billion rand. So that shows you that the number of contributors did not increase by much. So there hasn't been significant growth in the contributions into the fund. Next slide. If we then contrast that to benefits awarded, that has also not increased by much in year on year from 2020 to 2021, where we paid 111 billion in benefits for the year ended March 2021, as opposed to 110 billion at the end of March 2020. So it's a billion rand movement on both sides on contributions as well as benefits paid. And members will note that there is a gap between contributions received from an income side as opposed to the benefits that have been paid. And there's no direct correlation between those two, save for the cash flows, because we don't pay benefits from contributions received. But there's a natural relationship that people always try and draw between the two. And what is important is the returns that the fund earns from the investments that it makes and the cash flows derived from that, that enables the fund to sustain the payment of benefits. Next slide. The GEPF benefits, and as a highlight, this just provides the statistics of the number of benefits that we've paid. In terms of retirements, we processed around 28,000 retirement cases in the financial year ended March 2021. And the total value of gratuities paid was 19.7 billion rand. And the annuities paid for that period was 56.3 billion rand. Resignation benefits amounted to 25.6 billion rand for the same period, with resignation benefits, the total number of cases was 16,055 beneficiaries that were processed during the reporting period. Next slide. In terms of death benefits, we paid 6.2 billion rand in death benefits during the period, and 31,684 funeral benefit claims were processed and paid, to the tune of 462 million rand that was paid to beneficiaries during the reporting period. Next slide. Child pensions, we paid out 314 million rand in orphans and annuities during the period. And this is 6,171 children who are currently receiving this benefit from the GEPF. Okay. In terms of our engagements, as part of our stakeholder management activities through the GIPA and some of them directly through the GEPF, we had just shy of 382,000 visitors to GEPF offices across the country that are manned by the GIPA. And we had 115 serviced mobile units that were spread across the country. There were 870 employer education sessions that are facilitated by the GIPA at employer departments. And the GIPA conducted 2,679 employer site visits as part of our efforts to empower the employer to understand the importance of their role in the exit management process at retirement and then exit from the fund in general. There were 2,271 individual retiring member interviews that were conducted, because that enables our eminent retirees to be empowered with the processes that are necessary for them to exit speedily. And about 1.1 million telephone calls were attended to during the financial year. These engagements are important for us as they talk to the service delivery that is necessary for our members to be assisted on time, and satisfaction of our members is one of the key deliverables that the GIPA and ourselves strive to improve on annually. Next slide. Okay, in terms of our oversight and monitoring, I did indicate that the relationship between the GEPF and GIPA and the PIC is managed through different agreements. The mandate with the PIC and the GEPF, we have various structures that the GEPF board through the investment committee engages the PIC on. So in the mandate, we've set parameters that the PIC needs to adhere to on the mandate. And on a quarterly basis, the PIC reports to the board via the investment committee and management, where they give us progress against the mandate. And we monitor on a regular basis through the internal teams that is headed by the head of investments internally and other service providers that we've appointed through a master custodian and who's currently the Standard Bank of South Africa. They assist us in monitoring our asset managers, the PIC, and other asset managers appointed by the PIC on a daily basis. And we use those reports to hold the PIC accountable. And we have management structures that also assist us to hold the PIC accountable. And as and when there are breaches that are picked up, we're able to hold the PIC accountable. We've also ensured that as part of the transformation efforts, as the PIC makes investments, we ensure that we encourage them to have incubation programs so that they can also transform the asset management industry through the introduction of an incubation program for asset managers, which has always been in place, but we encourage that they drive that process going forward. We have also in the last financial year, which is post this annual report that we're presenting, updated the mandate with the PIC in line with the recommendations of the Mpati Commission of Inquiry that was submitted last year, February. So that mandate is now in place, and there are tighter controls between ourselves and the PIC in that regard. From a GPAP perspective, the agreement with the GPAR was updated as well, and the SLA gets continuously updated in line with the delivery expectations between ourselves and the GPAR. Through the Benefits and Administration Committee, we do, on a quarterly basis, have reports received from the GBAA where they report to us on the quality of service and how they're improving on the interactions with our members. The benchmarking of services that happens, we do global benchmarks as well as local benchmarks to try and assist with improving services within the GPAR, and continually work with them to enhance the service offerings. Next slide. Okay. Chair, that's all from the 2020-21 annual report and the financial performance and attainment of objectives. Should I pause here and take questions on the annual report, Chair, before we move on to the actuarial evaluation so that we can manage questions and answers? Or do you want us to do all three presentations and then take questions in the end?
Present all the documents that are before you so that we take all the presentations at once.
Thank you very much, Chair. So I'll take you now through a summary of the 2021 statutory actuarial evaluation. On this slide, Chair, we just summarize the valuation objectives. This is a requirement of the Government Employees Law that the statutory valuation needs to happen at least once every 3 years. And this is done to assess whether the fund has sufficient monies set aside, which is assets, to meet the liabilities that are due, which is the liabilities which are the benefit promises to members as and when they exit the fund. Another purpose of the valuation is to recommend an employer contribution rate in order to meet the cost of the benefits accruing in the future. And the valuation is based on placing a current value for benefit payments that are going to be made in the future. And what is important is that for this evaluation to be conducted, this requires assumptions to be adopted. And this is where the need for actuaries is important. So we make use of actuaries. I did indicate that the board in carrying out its fiduciary duties, and the law also dictates that we retain the services of evaluator and actuaries who assist us with valuing the fund. And this is one of those core functions of the fund. Next slide. Okay. The assumptions that I mentioned are updated at every valuation date to reflect the changing market conditions as well as the fund experience. In 2019, the fund underwent a demographic experience investigation, and this covered the withdrawal, mortality, as well as retirement rates. And these mortality, the demographic assumptions were updated and adopted for the 2021 valuations, and these were also adopted by the board for the actuaries after the investigation was done. Was presented to the board, and the actuaries actually explained the outcomes of that investigation, and this is based on historical data and their understanding of that data and the trends within our membership base, and then they present that to the board, and then the board approves those investigations, which leads to an adoption of the assumptions to enable the valuation to be conducted. And in this instance, the assumptions were more favorable, which also impacts the outcome of the valuation. The economic assumptions, such as the discount rates, salary and pension increases, are updated at each valuation date. And the main drivers of the liability values is the net discount rates, which are used to bring forward the value of the liabilities to work out what the future liabilities will be, working them out today. So the pre-gap between the discount rate and the salary increase assumptions, as well as the post-gap between the discount rate and the pension increase assumptions, those rates as depicted on the screen there between 2018 and 2021. So March 2018 was the date of the last valuation. The net pre-retirement discount rate in 2018 was 3.44, in 2021 it was 3.72, and in the net post-retirement discount rate in 2018 was 5.7%, and in 2021 it was 6.42%. Now the economic assumptions for 2021 were higher than in 2018 as indicated, and what is important for you to note is that the higher the discount rate, the lower the liabilities. And the lower the liabilities, and if we have higher assets and we have lower liabilities, then the higher the funding level of the fund. So this has a positive impact on the liability values of the fund. So we'll be carrying lower liabilities in the fund. Next slide. Okay. This table seeks to summarize the valuation results of the fund, and we contrast the 2018 results as opposed to the 2021 results, and I'll focus on the 2021 results. So at the bottom right of the table, I'll start at the bottom, the minimum funding level, which is almost the final outcome of the valuation, not to say the rest is not important, the fund is 110.1% funded, which in the final analysis means the fund is in a healthy position, and is a slight improvement in the minimum funding level from 108.3% funding level in 2018. In simple terms, what does that mean? It means for every one rand that the fund has in liabilities or owes to members at the valuation date, the fund is able to pay 1 rand and 10 cents to each pensioner or to each liability holder in the fund. So the fund is sufficiently funded in terms of the minimum funding level. And if I move up to the first row on that table, the net assets that were available to the fund at valuation date is 2,041,000,000,000. And the liabilities, total liabilities that are attributable to those assets is 1.85 trillion. So those compared to the net assets of 2 trillion and 41 trillion leave us with a surplus of 186 billion rand, which then translates into a surplus of 110.1% on the minimum funding level, which by and large says we are in a healthy funding position. On the next slide, if we can move to the next slide, we then go one level deeper. The actuaries then say we need to factor in contingency reserves, which now take into account the prospect of the assumptions that have been used in arriving at the valuation at the minimum funding level, which says we are healthy, we are able to meet our liabilities as predicted, But if we now take into account that if the assumptions that we've made don't materialize as we've envisaged, if things go wrong, what is the worst that can happen? And if all those permutations do not go according to plan, what are the reserves that we need to hold in order to make up for things going wrong? And the actuaries then say we need to have a contingency reserve of 892.8 billion rand to make up for things going wrong in the future. That would then leave the fund with a deficit, including reserves. So if we were to hold reserves as recommended by the actuaries for eventualities that are beyond our control, we would then need to have a surplus of reserves of 892 billion rand that we need to set aside. Then that the fund would then be in deficit of 706 billion rand. Then the long-term funding level of the fund would be at 74.3%. That is significant because it means in the long term, the fund would not be able to meet its liabilities if all the assumptions that we've made were not to be realized and the worst case scenario is to be achieved. And if you contrast that to the 2018 long-term funding level, the situation has deteriorated slightly from 75.5% to the 74.3% that it currently is at now. In simple terms, if you go to rows, the third row of that table, the surplus that we have of 186.8 billion rand is what we can afford to hold as reserves, as opposed to the 892 that the actuaries are requesting that we hold. So that is, we can afford to hold about 20% of what the actuaries are recommending that we hold. So on the long term, we are underfunded by about 25.7%. So we continue to watch this, and the board is well aware of this shortfall on the long term. I've already spoken to this page, but I think the last bullet point, I need to emphasize that the fund is financially sound and it has enough assets to pay all expected benefits, and it holds a buffer of 186.8 billion rand as a contingency reserve. The worst case scenario, as recommended by the actuaries, would be we should be holding a reserve of 706 billion rand, but we can only afford 186 billion rand. But on a minimum funding level, we can afford to pay all our benefits as and when they become due. Next slide. Okay. I did indicate that one of the purposes of the evaluation, actuarial evaluation, is to also determine and recommend a contribution, employer contribution rate for the employer. So that has also come out from the valuation, and the actuaries have recommended that for the next 2 years, the contribution that the employer should, recommended employer contribution rate for services members should be 17.3%, and for other members, which is the bulk of the members, should be 13.5%. So there is currently a shortfall in the contribution rate, as the current contribution rate for services members is 16%. And the contribution rate for other members is 13%. So there is a 1.3% shortfall in the contribution rate, employer contribution rate for services members, and a 0.5% shortfall in the contribution rate for other members. The board has since written to the employer, who's the Minister for Public Service and Administration, and has highlighted this. And the Minister of Finance is also aware of this in line with the GEP law. Next slide. Okay, that's it from the actuarial valuation as at 31 March 2021. I will now move on to unclaimed benefits. Chair, as at 31 March 2021, and this is the audited figure, our unclaimed benefit balance was 1.8 billion rand, and this was based on 24,886 cases. And during that period, 876 million rand was paid, of benefits was paid out of that account, but new cases amounting to 1 billion rand were transferred in. What is important to note that this account is active. So there are new cases that keep coming into unclaimed benefits. And as the team at GPA traces and finds the beneficiaries, some get paid out, and new cases of unclaimed benefits or unpaid benefits then get transferred in. So it's an active account that keeps moving, but the efforts to trace beneficiaries and pay them is an ongoing effort. In the current financial year, which we're currently in, or we are reporting on as at March 2022, approximately 595 million rand, or the equivalent of 6,153 cases of unclaimed cases were paid. So there is movement, again, demonstrating that the GPAR team is working hard at addressing unclaimed benefits. What is also significant is that unclaimed benefits is an industry-wide problem. I think at the last check, the number was touted at over 40 billion rand, if not more, which indicates that there is a data problem in the industry. Chair, our experience of unclaimed benefits is that most of it are due to bank account rejections. So we find that the banking details that are provided to us by beneficiaries or members at exit are incorrect. So when we attempt to make payments, the bank system will reject those payments, and then we sit with the payments and are unable to then trace the beneficiary in order to correct the banking errors. Some issues relate to tax matters where the beneficiary has tax-related issues with SARS, and SARS cannot issue us with a tax directive. And in that regard, we cannot pay out benefits, and we can only advise the beneficiary to contact SARS and address their tax affairs. And only then, once they have addressed their tax issues, can we get a tax directive and then make the necessary payments. Sometimes disputes lead to the payment of delays in the payment of benefits, and this could be disputes on the details of payment, either family disputes or spouses disputes. There are many disputes that can happen at the beneficiary level, at the member level, and with the employer that the GEPF or GPAR are not able to resolve, which then unfortunately the funds sit with the GEPF, and we are unable to pay and retain those funds in the unclaimed benefit account. And lastly, the untraceable members where we don't have information or missing information that makes it impossible for us to make payment is one of the challenging issues for us. And that's where we're looking at employing other tracing strategies to find members. But this then also opens us up to potential attempts for fraud, where if we don't have sufficient information, then people can then cook up ploys to try and defraud the GEPF. So together with the GPAR, we are looking at other ways of tracing our beneficiaries. I think last year the GPAR also went out and drew up lists of all the unclaimed beneficiaries. It was a list of individuals, and they circulated them by province. I think there was a bit of success where people identified their names and came forward, and then we were able to assist them, but it has not dented the unclaimed benefits balance. So we'll continue to find better ways of reaching out to our members, tracing to reduce this account. But I must stress that this is an ongoing balance. So there are new cases that come in. As we pay others out, new cases are transferred in. And this is largely driven by the definition of unclaimed benefits in the Pension Funds Act, where if a case has not been paid within 24 months, it's automatically classified as unclaimed. Where the case has been claimed, but it has not been paid. But because of the definition, it's classified as unclaimed benefits. But it does not take away the fact that someone is in need of the money and they have not received that payment. Next slide. Chair, that is the end of our presentation. I will pause there and we take questions. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kekana, on behalf of the board, and Mr. Mabeza, on behalf of the executives. Honorable members, that's the presentation from GEPF. Okay, I was muted. I see Akhbar Vessers, Ramulom, yeah, Mema Vileta. Akhbar Vessers, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to everybody, to all the colleagues. Thank you for the presentation and the presenting the annual report. I think firstly, a comment on the recovery. I think that's positive, that investments and the return on investments are recovering after the effect of the pandemic. But I think we should be mindful of the fact that there were certain investments, and especially the unlisted investments that were underperforming even before the effect of COVID, and we should be cognizant of that. Then specifically, I want to ask with regards to the renewed mandate to the PIC with regards to the Isavia investments. At a stage, and this was in 2017, the underperformance of those investments were about 30%. The latest figure that was made public was that the underperformance of those investments were 41% at that stage. Could we be provided with a specific percentage of how those investments, the Savaya investments, are doing? And if the board is really convinced that making those investments and renewing the mandate with regards to that is really complying with the legislation providing for that investments should be made, which are sustainable and which provide growth, and that should be kept in mind, not any other factors. And is the board really convinced that they are giving that mandate on the basis of those two criteria? Then another issue that in our last engagement a few years ago was raised, and the board would have investigated and would have come back to the committee with regards to this specific issue. So I want to raise it again. And that is the transaction or transactions that took place in the last one was concluded in 2019, and that was the purchase of land in Matlusana, the Palmitfontein farm, which was the total transaction was 586 million rand for 1,028 hectares, which was actually only valued at 25 million rand. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding that whole Isago transaction, and a lot of things played out, but we have never really received an update from the GEPF with regards to if they have investigated this. What is the current situation with regards to this investment? Is there any development taking place? Latest information is that there's no development on that land, and which means that there's no performance of that investment to the benefit of the members of the GEPF. If I'm wrong, please correct me, and please inform us, take us into your confidence and tell us what is the performance of that investment, which is a significant monetary investment, completely over any market value. And please also inform us if there was any market research done with the development of this project and the decision to invest and giving the PIC a mandate, and has this been investigated? Is there any financial modeling that took place or are taking place to actually investigate and look into this very controversial investment. I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Vetas. And Tatem Rolo.
Thank you very much, Modula Stilo. My question is with regard to the disbursement of benefits for retired members, spouses, or child benefits. With respect to the backlogs, how far back can we trace some of these, or generally these unclaimed benefits? Do we have a template which can shed light to the committee on how far back can we trace these current unclaimed benefits? And apart from tax matters, Chair, how far has GEPF improved its systems to track beneficiaries? And what is the success rate on average of this GEPA tracking strategy? In the presentation, there's an indication that while the tracking strategy has yielded some result, it has not been as successful as it was anticipated to be. The other question, Chair, is how much of these challenges of unclaimed benefits can we attribute to GEPF and its ability to track its beneficiaries? The last question is a general question, Chair, and it refers to the common practice in the industry of child maintenance defaulters who resign because they want to evade their obligation to maintain their children. Is there a way of managing this malpractice? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Mrolong. Honorable Mavileta, over to you.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you for the presentation. My comment is also going to be according to unclaimed benefits. I'm really worried about these unclaimed benefits. You know, you take your time, you work for all these years, and at the end of the time, you do not receive anything because of issues like tax-related issues. I mean, I could imagine that staff all these years, they are taking what is due to them. And when they are supposed to give you or to let you go, it's very difficult. And also, this issue about the dispute leading to submitting of documents, I could imagine that it is also related to a workplace where you are working. So I'm just asking myself, how efficient is the workplace? Because if the workplace, you know, is sufficient enough, and they're also doing their job, and if they correlate with you, there's not going to be any problem. I'm happy if you are saying you're also looking for other ways. I don't know if you have also considered going paperless, because I can imagine documents, you are old, you are supposed to go, and I can imagine maybe the office where you are is upstairs, and then you are supposed to submit again document and sign them. Paperless, I think it should be a way to go. The banks are using paperless. They don't lose anything. You know, maybe you should also consider from day one between you and the workplace, just go the route of paperless and maybe things will improve. And I mean, when I'm working, I'm traceable. When I leave my job, I'm not traceable anymore. And I do have an ID. I just feel for the people who are supposed to get their money, honestly. So I just imagine and hope that you work harder and continue tracing them because they really need their money. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mema Vileta. Back to GPF for responses.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the honorable members for the questions. Firstly, I'll deal with Honorable Vessel's two questions. The first one is on the renewed Isibaya mandate, for lack of a better word. The reference to PIC's poor performance on Isibaya is noted, Chair, and this is reference to historic poor performance. And I think I must preface my response with the difference between impairments that we've suffered on the unlisted investments over the years, as opposed to potential write-offs of investment in the unlisted space. So the poor performance cannot be excused, and it is to be expected that investments both in the listed and unlisted space will happen. So that is a fact, and unlisted investments have performed, some have underperformed, and some have performed and continue to perform for us. So those that have underperformed, we have impaired them and disclosed those over the years. And we've carried the values that have underperformed and led to impairments. But what we've done, Chair, and it's unfortunate that the annual report is not part of the presentation in detail, but I can reference in the annual report itself, we have a schedule of reversals of impairment, which is on page 144 of the 2020-21 annual report, Chair. In the 2021 financial year, we had a reversal of impairments, which means investments that in prior years had underperformed and their valuations were lower due to either poor performance or poor economic conditions, and have since regained their performance and their valuation has since improved. We had a reversal of impairments or an improvement in the values of 2.1 billion rand. And that's why I preface my response with the statement that we impair investments that are not valued at their original values because they're either not performing well or there are other economic factors that lead to them being held at a lower value, but we don't write them off because if they can be turned around and their performance improves, their values do change. So we continue to hold those investments. Chair, to the extent that there are investments that were either entered into in a manner that is questionable or the investments themselves are not worth the paper that they're written on, Chair, that's a different discussion altogether. But those investments that don't perform and we have the ability, and the PIC has teams who turn around the investments, they intervene, they monitor these investments in the unlisted space, and they also intervene, we are able to demonstrate that these can be turned around, and we see the reversal in those impairments. So that's the nature of unlisted investments in general. Hence, we retain those impairments from year to year, and we also record the reversals whenever there are those improvements and turnarounds in those businesses. Chair, to be specific as to why we would continue to give the PIC a mandate on unlisted investments, Chair, the research that, and this is the world over based on benchmarks, the unlisted investments are bringing about growth for many pension funds or retirement funds globally, where they invest significant amounts of money in unlisted investments. And we should also be seeking returns in unlisted investments. We've got a small allocation, I think up to 5% so far in unlisted investments. 5% of the GPF is a significant amount. So I'm not discounting how big that amount is. And we continue to see growth in these investments. So by no means shall we say that we impair in the 1 year. Therefore, it's good for us to continue investing in those. Impairments are part of the investments of making investments, both listed and unlisted. But we believe in unlisted investments as indicated by our asset liability modeling exercise that gives us our strategic asset allocation that says you can invest up to 5% in unlisted investment. The PIC remains our asset manager as the agreement we have with them in place. And I indicated in my presentation that following the Mpathi Commission of Inquiry report and the recommendations made, we have refreshed the mandate with the PIC. We have implemented the controls that the Mpathi Commission of Inquiry recommended, and the board has also included other controls in place. We have also beefed up our monitoring and intervention capabilities within the GEPF to ensure that we have better control and monitoring over the PIC and our investments in this space in particular. So the strategy remains in place as guided by the experts who advise us on how we should be investing, which areas, which sectors we should be investing in. So that is the rationale behind the renewed mandate with the PIC, obviously with better controls in place from the lessons that we've learned previously. Chair, insofar as the Palmitfontein investment that Honorable Bessels has referred to, Chair, the board is reviewing that transaction and will, once the review is done, we'll definitely give feedback on what the outcomes of that review have been. And that is a transaction the PIC made in 2018-19. So the board is reviewing that transaction and will provide an update once the review is done. Chair, moving on to Honorable Morolong's questions. Retired members and spouses benefits, on how far back we can trace the current unclaimed benefits. Chair, the data is available at the GPAA. GPA will be joining the committee later on, Chair, and they can provide the exact details. We do have details of our members, Chair, accurate details of when our members stopped contributing at the GEPF, when we last received contributions from them, and when we received claim documents, but we have not been able to pay. So we can ask the GPA. If they don't have it readily available, it can be provided after the meeting, Chair. In terms of the success rate, and after I'm done with these answers, Chair, I'll ask our head of actuarial and benefits to give detailed responses to these as well. In terms of the success rate of unclaimed benefits, at any given point, you can't say for sure what is the success rate, as indicated that the number is a moving target. As and when you receive new cases and new cases are being paid out for various reasons. In my presentation, I did segment the various reasons for unclaimed benefits. Where there is missing information for payment, that is the real unclaimed benefit, because we don't have information to enable us to make payments. But Chair will flag this to give you a specific percentage on the success rate of our tracing efforts. So that's another figure that the GPAA can provide on its ability to track. Linked to the ability to track, or the GEPF's inability to trace beneficiaries, there is an internal unit that is in place at the GPAA that seeks to track our members. Obviously, in light of the protection of personal information and the laws in place, we can't necessarily get personal information from other partners. There are efforts by GPAA to partner with banks. They are talking with credit bureaus, SARS, Home Affairs. We already have a link with Home Affairs to the extent that we can get updates on people's statuses. So we do try and find ways to collaborate with other institutions to help us with our data. So speaking of data, this is a data driven issue. If we don't have correct data, we will not be able to make payments on time to the correct beneficiaries. And in order for us to manage the risk of fraudulent claims and not making fraudulent payments, we then have to be thorough in how we do our checks. And then lastly, on the question of court orders or ability to pay child maintenance claims, in the absence of a court order, we cannot attach someone's benefits. So unless there's a court order, we cannot attach someone's benefits. That's the limitation. So we'll need a court order for us to attach someone's benefits in order to make payment. And then Honorable Mavileta, the SARS issue, I think the one limitation is if we don't have a tax directive from SARS, we can't make a payment. And that tax affairs are between a taxpayer and SARS. We don't have the ability to intervene. To the extent that SARS will tell us that there's tax affairs of a member that are not in order, we can then relay those issues to the affected member or beneficiary. And then in terms of workplace issues, we agree with you that some of the challenges are actually emanating from the employer. And what we've since done from last year is to establish a bilateral with the employer. So the GEPF, GPAR, and the DPSA, we've signed an MOU where we are making the employer aware of the importance of the employer, especially HR practitioners at the employer departments, and the role that they play in exit management. They facilitate onboarding of members when employees join the employer. Now at exit as well, they have a huge role to play there. To the extent that they don't complete exit forms on behalf of members correctly, we will then receive an incomplete form with inaccurate data, which then leads to the challenges that we are faced with. So that process, we are busy educating the employer departments, especially HR officials. And part of the automation process that the GPAA is currently working on is to ensure that this automated modernization of GPAA is to facilitate a process where exit management is done electronically, forms are submitted electronically, and claims are received at GPAA electronically in a paperless environment. I think there are three departments where this has been piloted, and the GPAA, once they come on check, can talk to the extent of the deployment of this project. And they're working very hard to deliver this solution so that at some point we get to a paperless exit management process. But we can't stress enough the importance of the employer's role in the exit management process. If the employer does not submit documents on time, we will not be able to process benefits on time as well. Those, and we've got cases, and the GPAR can attest to this, Chair, those cases that we receive documents on time, I think they are paid within 2 weeks at times, where the law says we should be paying within 60 days. So the system does work, but where the documentation or the information submitted to us is incomplete or inaccurate, then the delays happen, and that goes back to employers. But I'll ask my colleague to talk, to respond to the one question on the unclaimed benefits on spouses and retiring members. Brian?
Thank you, honorable members. I was just going to specifically address the question where about how far back the unclaimed benefits relate to. So we have less than 1% of the cases being 25 years back, and we have approximately 8 to 9% of the cases being between 11 and 20 years back. So those are the problem cases where we have insufficient data and we are still trying to trace the dependents. But the majority of the unclaimed benefits are within the 6 to 7 year period to the current financial year. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Are you done, Mr. Mabes, with the responses?
Yes, I'm done, Chair. Thank you.
I see a hand of M. Kutsiye. Who's M. Kutsiye?
Well, good morning. My name is Shahid Khan. We've asked the committee secretary to change the name because they control the video. My name is Shahid Khan and I'm the acting CEO of the GPA, and Musa has asked me to come in. So and I'd like to talk through the unclaimed benefits challenge with regards to where we are. And what I'd like to perhaps start off indicating to you that the unclaimed benefits issues that the GPA faces is part of an industry-wide challenge in terms of how we deal with unclaimed benefits. And I do know that the Financial Conduct Authority reports to this committee, but they had tried to arrest the situation with regards to unclaimed benefits over the last 10 years. So perhaps just to reflect on unclaimed benefits, before when there was an unclaimed benefit in the industry and with the GPA, that money was returned back to income. And so it was returned back to the fund, basically. But the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which was previously the Financial Services Board, changed the legislation in order to allow for there to be a separate holding account for unclaimed benefits, and that started around about 2010 onwards. And therefore, if we look at the data with regards to unclaimed benefits, it does go far back. But what I can indicate to you, and I think what Brian, the actuary of the GEPF, indicated to you, is that the bulk of the information and the bulk of the unclaimed benefits fall in the current, in the four current years. So in 2022, it was 25%. In 2020-2021, it was 26%. 2019 to 20 was 19%. And so you can cascade down with regards to unclaimed benefits. And I think what is perhaps critical, and I understand the concerns of the members of the committee, is that this is money lying in pension funds and also with the GPF, which should be going to beneficiaries. And the sooner we can get a hold and the sooner we can manage that process, it would be better. But as the PEO of the GPA indicated to you, this is a moving target because it keeps growing year on year. So what we need to ensure is that our percentage of payment should outpace our percentage of growth in order for us to be able to try to arrest the situation. In the information that has been provided to you, at the moment we have an 87% recovery rate with regards to payment, but that's not good enough. It's not good enough when there is economic pain out in the economy, where people need this money and they don't know that they have this money, or they don't want to come forward for all the reasons as articulated by the PEO. So it is something that remains of importance to the GPA as the administrator. We have put together a new policy. We've got tracing agents going out to provinces, especially rural provinces such as the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, where people cannot be traced. So we're trying our best in order to link up with the Department of Home Affairs through ID numbers. We link up with SALGA with regards to local government. We meet the private sector in terms of looking at their databases. We cross-reference all of these things in order to address this. So I wish to assure the committee that from a GPA perspective, while recognizing the challenge around unclaimed benefits, it's something that requires a lot of attention, and we report on this to the board, to our minister, as I am directly responsible to the Minister of Finance, on a quarterly basis to ensure that these issues do not fall off the table and remain a priority. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Shahid. Follow-up questions, Honorable Vetters?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the responses. Chair, I'm extremely worried about what is being said about the board still reviewing the Palmeat Fontein transaction. You would remember, Chair, that the fellow committee members would remember that we had an engagement on the 19th of February 2020. And in that meeting, exactly the same was said, that the board is busy reviewing the transaction and will report back as soon as possible. That's 2 years, more than 2 years later now. And the same is being said, that the board is still reviewing this transaction. Is there any timeline, any time frame in this regard? It can't take more than 2 years to do this. And there must be some current progress reporting with regards to what that development is currently entailing. It's one thing investigating the transaction, what happened there, why was it approved, why was that monetary value involved there, and why was it the whole transaction. But the other part of it is what is currently happening there. And the board must have some kind of progress report with regards to, is there development? Is anything happened? Has anything happened since 2018, 2019, when these transactions and this land was acquired? It can't be that the board is just sitting back and they don't know what's happening with almost half or more than half a billion rand. What is happening there? What is happening on the N12 with that development? Is there anything happening there? So it's that's the follow-up question, Chairperson, but I really do think we can't just leave this here. We have to include this in our report. We can't be told 2 years prior that the board is busy with reviewing the transaction, and then 2 years later they're saying the same thing to us. We'll have to have a time frame. We'll have to get a progress report and progress in this regard. Chair, if you allow me, just it's a new question with your permission, but it's something that was said that just reminded me of this issue. I've been asking this question. I've submitted written questions to the Minister of Finance in this regard. I haven't received an answer yet. But my question is, what's the situation? The one thing is the unclaimed benefit. And we're all worried about that situation. I think it's been elaborated on. But the other issue is late payments of benefits. And there's a lot of complaints out there that people are waiting for their benefits, waiting much longer than Section 26 provides for. And what is the situation with regards to late payments? There's also the question out there from organizations that there should be interest on those late payments. Has that been considered? And is there any consequences with regards to because it's mostly due to administrative faults? And I know the answer a lot of times is that the beneficiary did not submit all the correct paperwork and so forth. But there's a lot of cases where that's not at all the reason. Everything was submitted on time, and the delay is really at the GEPF's office level. And as this, and I remember on the 19th of February, once again in 2020, we also asked this question. There was also an undertaking by the board and by the GEPF to come back to us with a written response on these late payments. We've never received that. And as I said, my question also remains unanswered. So if we can please also be provided with that information. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Vickers. Honourable Mabila.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, seeing that you know you are really keen to explore new things and new ideas, as an employee, the only place that I know is my workplace. Could you perhaps consider, maybe, if
my money is there, is out. You send it back to my employer and then they will pay me. And that also will make sure that the frustration that you are getting to my employer will lessen, because now I will go straight to where I was working and work for my money. Maybe you should consider that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Members. Let me ask just one question. Let me welcome the report of GPF, and also acknowledge an improvement in the assets of the fund that grew on the average rate of 8.9%, and also acknowledge the growth of the investment portfolio. We have to acknowledge where there's a positive development, so that the board does not come here and think that we only ask questions, and when we ask them hard questions, it's like we're cross-examining them. No, we ask questions on behalf of the public, because we are public representatives. Be that as it may, we also acknowledge the performance registered by the GEPF. And we acknowledge the staff, including the executive and the board, for the sterling work that they are doing. Up to a cleaner, because sometimes we don't think of people who clean our offices, and those who do technical work and change globes and fix leaking pipes in the establishment. We only think, every time we talk performance, we only think of executives and the board, and that is very wrong. The institution ticks, because there's somebody who wakes up at 4 o'clock from Mamelodi to come and clean the office of the chairman and the executives of the GEPF, so that when you come at 7:30, your office is clean and you work in a clean environment. So we have to acknowledge those women who board buses and trains from Soshanguve and all over to come and work in your offices. Just one question, Mpate Kekan and Mr. Mabez. I heard you talking about big companies providing actuarial services. And do you enlist the services of black companies to provide legal services, actuarial, auditing and accounting firms, or is only the Alexander Forbes and the Standard Bank of this world? Can you tell us which companies? Don't say we enlist the services of black companies. Tell us which are those, because you have mentioned Alexander Forbes and Standard Bank, and we know their background. To what extent are you empowering blacks who are in that industry to make sure that they play an important role in the mainstream of the industry? Over to you, Mr. Mabeza and the board.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll respond to your last question first. Chair, so the board is intentional about the empowerment of black-owned firms. So our actuaries are actually a joint operation. The board insisted that whoever is successful, if it's a
one of the more established firms, they have to partner with a black firm. So our valuator is actually Mr. Sandile Mbili, who owns African Origin. So it's a black owned actuarial firm who is in partnership with Alexander Forbes. So he's the lead actuary and he's the valuator of the fund. So they were on a 5-year arrangement. In the first year, Alexander Forbes did the valuation. And then the second year, there was a handover and Mr. Mbili is the valuator. So I omitted to mention African Origins and Alexander Forbes as a JV. The same applies with our external auditors. It's Deloitte and Touche together with SABNT. Next year, SABNT, again, that's another intentional arrangement that we said there has to be a joint venture. Our legal panel also has similar arrangements where if it's an established firm, they have to empower a smaller black firm. So there is a deliberate attempt, Chair, to empower smaller firms to ensure transformation. So we may have mentioned the one party to the exclusion of the other. It's by no means us admitting that we don't empower other firms, Chair. And Chair, the answers to the other questions that were asked, follow-up questions. So Chair, Honorable Vessels went back to the Palmitzfontein transaction. Again, Chair, for noting purposes, I'll refer members to page 124 of the 2020-21 annual report of the GEPF. It's disclosed, the board has been very transparent. On page 124, we disclose our investment properties and Palmitzfontein is disclosed at the bottom of that page. In 2020, which is the first year that this transaction was reported after the first valuation, after we made the investment, the transaction was held at 517 million rand. So when we appeared in Parliament, if I remember correctly, it must have been February 2020, just before COVID, and the questions were asked around the transaction. It had just been made in 2019, and the valuation by the board had not been done at that time. So the board then conducted an independent valuation of the property, and the valuation came back at 517 million. And that independent valuation then affirmed that the property is valued at close to what the purchase price was at 510 million. And the PIC also assured us that the transaction was above board. Last year, Chair, and this is the note that I'm referring you to, linked to the note on page 124 is reference to note 25 of the financials, to the financials, which is on page 155. There was a change in accounting estimate in that the valuer of this farm last year changed the technique that they used to value the farm from a residual land valuation methodology, which was used by the last valuer who did the valuation in 2020, to a comparable sales valuation methodology. And that significantly dropped the value of the property from 517 million in 2020 to 179 million rand in 2021. And that led to the board then undertaking the review that I'm referring to. So Honorable Vessels, when I said the board is reviewing, now this is a board-driven review. At the time, the board was inquiring with the PIC, relied on the valuation that was done, which was confirmed by an independent valuer, which came back at 517 and confirmed the initial value of 510 million, which we had paid through the PIC. And then last year's change in valuation technique, which dropped the value significantly to 179 million, then triggered the board to conduct its own review. That's the one that I said the board is busy with. So it explains the delay in the timing. I hope that covers Honorable Vessel's concern of the time delay. So the PIC assured us in 2020, after we appeared in Parliament, when the board was inquiring about the transaction, as asked at the time, and they assured us that everything was done, the valuations were done, and our own independent valuation that was done confirmed the amount at 517. Then last year, when there was a change in valuers and a change in the technique based on the information that was available and the amount came in way lower, then the board initiated its own review that I referred to that is currently underway. I hope that that suffices, Chair. The issues on late payment that Honorable Vessels refers to, again, we acknowledge that there's a challenge, a data challenge. So there's a data challenge and there's an employer submission challenge. And this is not to take away some of the resource constraints that the GPAA has. And I think the GPAA, Shahid, will talk to it when the GPA talks to their performance later on. But there are issues with data, Chair, that need to be addressed. And there's a function at the GPAA and the GEPF is helping with that. But there are also employer challenges where if the employer does not provide us with the correct employment information, number of years of service, if that does not reconcile, it will add challenges to it. Chair, on the issues that Honorable Vessels has mentioned around questions that were asked that were never responded to. Chair, if it was a parliamentary question that went through the Minister of Finance's office, we'll follow up, Chair, if there was one that was never responded to. If it's questions that were asked at our last appearance in February 2020, Chair, I stand to be corrected. We were supposed to reappear, but then COVID hit, lockdowns happened, and we never appeared again until today. So it could be the responses to those questions then fell through the cracks because we were never re-invited to SCOF to reappear. But we'll follow up with the parliamentary officer, Chair, to check if there were any written questions that we needed to respond to in writing. But if it was a question of us reappearing before committee to respond, it could be we were never invited until today, Chair, to reappear. The last question from Honorable Mabileta on the possibility of paying the funds back to the employer. Chair, I think that would be a difficult one to consider in that the law currently does not provide for that. And I think the employer would not be in a position to administer benefits in that regard, because then we're transferring the responsibility to them. We'd need to change their processes and the laws that govern their processes. The issues are not with the GPF or the GPA necessarily, but it's in the processes from the employer to get the information back to the GPF and GPA to enable the processing thereof. But I, Chair, through you, I think Shahid has his hand up, could be wants to also talk to the same matter. Thanks, Chair.
Shahid, why don't you put on hold, and when you present the GPA, you also take this question.
Yeah, I'll take the question from Mr. Basson at the end of my presentation.
Who's Basson, Shahid?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Vessels. Sorry, I'm Mr. Voter Vessels. I will take his question after my presentation, because I think the presentation deals with it.
Yeah, don't bring new members of parliament to this platform, please.
No, I certainly wouldn't.
You will get into very serious problems, and I won't defend you. Okay, let's move to the next item, briefing by GPA on their quarterly report. Over to you, GPA.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We're just basically doing a screen share so that we can put the presentation on the screen for members to, so just give us a moment for us to do that. Yes. And we'd also like the host to allow us to share in order for us to do the presentation. One. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members of the committee. I trust that you can see the presentation. I will move to slide 2, which basically gives you an indication of where we as the GPA fits into the finance family and the broader family. The GPA is the administrator of the GPF in terms of benefits. We report directly to the Minister of Finance. We also have a reporting line to the board, and we have a reporting line to the National Treasury. So we fit into the family as the administrator. In terms of the we serve two main beneficiaries, or with regards to who we are, it's the GPF and the National Treasury. So we administer a budget. We have a budget of just under R1 billion, which comes from the GPF, which is 93%. And if you look on the other side, National Treasury contributes 7% of the cheaper budget, which means that the bulk of our money comes from the pension fund, the GPF, and only 7% of our budget is appropriated through Parliament. Our contributions collections are 80.1 billion. And that obviously is in support of the PIC. Our claims paid, and what I've decided to do in this presentation is to give you the updated data as of today, and will be tabled in our annual report on in September by the Minister. But I thought it appropriate to provide you with the most up-to-date information. So as you can see from the GEPF's report to claims paid to date, there's been a significant improvement in claims, and we have paid for the 2021-2022 year 134 billion rand to beneficiaries. So that we have put into the market on the supply side that amount of money. And in there, you will see that 1.261 are our members. Our pensioners are 322,000 pensioners, and we have about 177,000 beneficiaries. If we look at the National Treasury side of issues, we've paid out claims of just under 5 billion. And of that claims, we administer special pensions our membership is 5,713. If we look at post-retirement medical subsidies for civil servants, we have 140,000 odd pensioners. If we look at military pensions, and I want to just inform the committee here that these are military pensions in terms of medical aid, in terms of medical support. It's not military pensions for in terms of veterans, etc. It's only in terms of medical support. And we have 4,613 pensioners. Then on injury on duty, we have 10,000 beneficiaries. And then obviously we also pay the president, judges, etc. And there are 778 members and pensioners in that regard. Let's move to the next slide. I just thought it's important for you to see that we have two big programs in terms of our strategic plans and in terms of our annual reports, which we table in Parliament, and the program one, which is basically support services, and program two basically is benefits administration, and the other issues are quite self-explanatory. If you look at our performance targets in terms of the APP, for program one, we have a 63% achievement. We have achieved 5 of our 8 targets. And for program two, which is basically our raison d'etre for being here, and that is paying our pensions, we have a 65% achievement, and we've achieved 11, and we are dealing with 6 in terms of work in progress. I think the greatest, if you look at some of the highlights, if you look that we have an 88.25 percent of benefits are paid on time after receiving duly completed documents, and an average of 99.41 of new members that were admitted. If you look at and the GPF minister on behalf of the GPF, the active membership at the moment is 1.275 million, and in excess of 300,000 pensioners at the end of March. There was a marked increase in the benefit claims, with approximately 134 billion having been paid out to beneficiaries, compared to 108.46 paid in the previous year. If you look at what the GPF reported, they reported 111 billion, and that is actually correct. What you see here is an accounting difference between accruals and what we calculate after the financial year. So the figures are correlated between our presentation and that of the GPF. If you look at an executive synopsis in terms of the performance on our APP, as I indicated, 64%, 16 out of 25 indicators were achieved. Our membership is 1.261 members, which is different from both active members and pensioners, which is, if you want to correlate it to the previous slide. Then the GPF member contributions, at the moment, it's around about 80.1 billion. By the time we table the annual report, that should have increased. So we ask you to look at this figure as a tentative figure. We will be tabling the annual report in September. If you look at benefits paid, and I've split that up between National Treasury and the GPF, National Treasury new member cases increased by 18,842. National Treasury monthly cases paid, 162,690. GPF new cases paid, which is 69,126, and GPF monthly pensions paid is just under 500,000. And then I've also put the figures there in terms of the unclaimed benefits, and I think we've discussed that. With regards to debt collection, gross debt balance is currently 286.3 million. Pensioners serviced is 322,223 pensioner members. Post-retirement medical subsidy, a total number of 140,160. And the average payment per member has increased to 2,115 rand. With regards to military pension, as I indicated, they are only with regards to medical support. We're looking at 4,613. And from our human resources side, we're sitting at the moment with a staff complement of 915 and a contract complement of 168. Performance against our service level agreements with the GPF, in terms of members admitted, we have 100% versus a target of 97%. Received and reconciled contributions, 99.98 against a target of 97. Death benefits paid, you will see a huge challenge, the 28.69% actual versus a 55% target. Benefits paid within 45 days, 76.52 actual versus an 86% target. You can cascade all of that down in terms of the data concern. I just thought I'll highlight the most important data that you need to be informed of. Members admitted within 14 days, 98.82. Records maintained within 21 days, 99.82 against a target of 99. Pension, a suspended pensioner reinstated, 99.56 versus a target of 99%. Members certificate issued, 99.9% versus a target of 99%. Death benefits paid within 60 days, 93.58% versus a target of 85%, and benefits paid within 20 days, 99.98% versus a target. And that's with regards to our targets with regards to the National Treasury. It's important that you remember that. I also thought it's important that we provide you with some type of information with regards to our client relationship management in line with our Batapili principles. And I thought I'd provide you the latest data with how we engage with our clients, which are our members and our pensioners, to get the message across to the committee that what we are trying to do, while not perfect, we place our clients as our most important priority. And there are various ways in which we engage with them. We do it through our walk-in centers, we do it through telephonic calls, we do it through customer satisfaction surveys, we do it through our ICT platforms, etc. So there are various ways in which we engage with our clients in order to ensure. We also quite pleased, and I've informed Parliament when I was with the Parliament in September of last year, that we also have a self-service app in order to reduce the amount of times people have to come into our centres. I also wish to perhaps share with you, and if you look at the call centre service levels and you look at where we are, we have come out of a period of COVID. And so people then were not comfortable coming to our walk-in centres, although we were open throughout the period as an essential service. There was a huge demand on telephonic services. And what you've seen and what I provided for you there is an upward trend in the way we deal with dealing with telephonic services. I just thought it's important that we share this slide with you and the data presented to Parliament. Next slide. Then in terms of our interventions, in terms of calls answered versus calls offered, additional call center agents have been employed, customer satisfaction levels. We now, post-COVID, doing outreach, mobile offices, where we go to far-flung areas where people cannot come to a regional office or to one of our offices throughout the country. We're also improving our processes and multi-channel contact centers. If we look at our percentage of Black employees, I wish to say to you that we are committed to transformation, and we are ensure that our targets are missed. I do believe that we, through last year, the Department of Public Service and Administration, through a service level agreement, increased the target to, I think, 94%, if I'm not sure, and we are marginally under that target. And to achieve that target cannot happen overnight. It's based on vacancy rates, based on adverts, but we are right up there ensuring that we are represented throughout the organization and we reflect the demographics of our country. In terms of invoices paid, we are making significant strides there within 30 days. We do realize that we deal with a lot of small companies that cannot wait, and we are the target was 100%, and I think we are just on under 99.7%. GPF benefits paid within 45 days. We're also looking at automation with third-party validations and process optimization, and we're also dealing with a modernization initiative in order to ensure that we automate and modernize in the same breath. The GPF debt benefit paid within 60 days. We've seen optimism. Automation of third-party validations. What you need to understand and what you've seen and what you will see in the data is because of COVID, we've had a huge impact on our operations in terms of death benefits. And so what we've done is we've sent more resources through to managing death benefits in order to ensure that we can pay out those death benefits on time. Move on to the next slide. Our human capital management, you are aware, and I did indicate this when I appeared before the committee with the Deputy Minister in September of last year, is that we have vacancies in our senior executive level. In fact, all our positions are vacant from the CEO and the senior managers, and the Minister and the Deputy Minister has given complete commitment to deal with that, and I believe they're in the process of finalizing authorizing the appointment of the CEO. So that will go a long way. And I've also shared with you the equity level statistics, which I think is important as well. We can move to the next slide. Then on a financial management information, I provided you this information because of the presentation we did with regards to our commitment in terms of meeting the, we appeared before you with regards to the Auditor General and the audit outcomes. So all the information that I'm presenting to you here is to give you some comfort in terms of our compliance with supply chain management and financial management processes, together with the next slide as well, which I just thought I would augment what I shared with you at the portfolio committee in September. So that's basically next slide. So I'm just giving you a rounded indication of the information that I thought would be appropriate in terms of your oversight role and what we need to report on, and we open for questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Shahid, for the report. Over to you, honorable members, to engage with the report of GIPA. There's something not the right from my side. Okay, there we are. Members, do you have questions? Do you have comments?
Chairperson, perhaps while members are contemplating questions, should I go back to the question that Mr. Voter Vessels asked with regards to the perception that payment, that there's no, that the issues are purely administrative faults within the GIPA?
Okay, you can go.
So Mr. Basson, let me tell you now, I don't know why I got that name, Mr. Vessels. I would share with you what we do with the GPF on departments. Exit management is a responsibility of the whole of government. And it thus requires everybody to work together in order to make payments. The GIPA is in the end of that value chain of document sharing. And we need to understand that from the onset. So as the PO had indicated to you, we have set up a working team with the Department of Public Service and Administration in order to get to the bottom of the challenges around exit management within government, in order for the GIPA as the administrator of the fund to pay out more expeditiously. I do not want to create the impression that as an institution, we are 100% efficient. That would not be the case. If I would venture to and on a quarterly basis, what we do is we share the information with the GEPF as well as with the public service on the challenging departments with regards to paying out of benefits. And it is not surprising that it is the large departments which seem to have quite a decentralized exit management process. That seems to be the biggest challenge in terms of ensuring that the members are paid out. And so on a quarterly basis, we provide that data to the GPF on the worst, what we call the worst performing departments. And I don't want to use that term in a negative sense, but it's the departments that face challenges with regards to processing of information. But I want to share with you an experience, and I took the PEO to to the Department of Defense, and we went to the military base in Simonstown in January. And what you will learn is that the exit process starts on the last day of the person leaving. The individual, who might be a sailor, has to hand in all his military equipment. He has to hand in his gun. He has to hand in everything that belongs to him or to her before the processes start at the base. Once the process starts at the base, it has to go to a regional office for verification. Then it has to go from that verification process to a provincial office, and then from the provincial office to national. And then national sends it on to us for processing. Now, just imagine if you are a police person, or you are a teacher, or you're from correctional services or health and education, which is the largest departments that we deal with. What do you think is going to happen when that documentation doesn't reach us on time? And then what we also need to do is we need to verify that documentation independently of what has come through to ascertain that we will pay out the right amount of money in order to ensure that we do not negatively affect the fund by paying out monies that people shouldn't have. So I just want to set the scenario that as the GPA and as the administrator of the fund, we take the payment of benefits extremely seriously. It's our raison d'etre. And we've got to work on the improvement of our internal services with regards to, as I indicated to you, that we have inefficiencies within the organization. And that is being addressed through a performance management system in order to ensure that we make sure that our staff members are productive from the day they walk in till the day they walk out of the institution at the end of the day. But what we've also done, Mr. Vessels, is that we've embarked on a modernization initiative where we not only automate the processes, but we also find ways of expediting that process. And we are now probably looking at 3 or 4 years away from the completion of our modernization initiative. So the challenges are there, and with the economic pain out there in the country, clearly those that are not being serviced on time have a right to feel angry. On time and efficiently. So I just wish to share that with you while we recognize space as an institution ourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Shahid. Shahid, let's go to slide 5, and then we'll go to 11. Where is 5? Performance against, against APP 2021-2022. Can you see that slide? Yeah, there we are. GPA programs 1 and 2. Total annual indicators. Program 1, 8, program 2, 17. Achieved 63, 65 respectively. And then total is overall is 64. Achieved 5, 11, 16. Not achieved. Can you see in program 2, 6? I mean, it's much higher. Can you explain what's happening here? Why didn't you achieve three targets or indicators, whatever you call them, on program 1 and 6 under program 2, and all in all is 9 indicators that you did not achieve. So if you look at not achieve this 9 and achieve this 16, so it's like just if it's half of what you did not achieve. Can you explain that slide?
So, Chairperson, thank you. You will recall that what we do is we table an annual performance plan in Parliament. The annual performance plan is aligned to the service level agreements that we have with both the GPF and the National Treasury. And in that annual performance plan, there are set targets that we have to achieve. And so if you look at sub-program one, which is program one, there is an achievement rate in terms of our corporate services, where we achieved a 66.6% target, and that is basically on human resource management. We achieved two of our targets and one was still outstanding. And if I cascade that down to sub-program two, and that would be in our annual performance plan, which we tabled to Parliament, we will then look at how we did in our financial management in terms of what we achieved. And there we had two targets to achieve, and we achieved one and we didn't achieve another target. And I think what we didn't achieve there is paying all our payments 33% within 30 days. We only paid 93.2%, and the target was 100%, and so we missed the target by 0.68%. And then with regards to the third target was on a clean audit, and we're still awaiting that outcome. And then if we cascade that down to strategic support, we got 100%, and business enablement, we got 100%. So if you correlate this information with the information with regards to what is in our APP, it will give you an indication of the challenges and where we have fallen short.
You are referring us to where? So that we can understand where you are falling short.
What I did is I called the committee clerk 2 days ago, and I asked the committee what is this before the committee in order for you to assess, and I is before the committee. Then what I did is I went to see what was tabled in Parliament by the GPA, and I looked at our annual performance plan, which is our contract with the minister to Parliament. And I used those indicators to indicate where our achievements are and where our achievements are not. And that's how I provided the data based on information tabled to the committee.
No, okay. You have to do your work. If you set targets, it's not us who have set those targets. Program 1, 8, program 2, 17, and not achieve the 3, 6. So you have to meet your targets, because that's how you are actually evaluated or measured in terms of your performance. Let's move to slide 11. I think it's 12, yeah, financial management 2021-2022. Then you put it on the screen, slide it, yeah. Then that's 12, the next one. Financial management 2021-2022. Yes, there we are. Budget expenditure of 984.4 million versus a total budget of 1,073,200,000. Underspending of 89.7 million. It goes down just like that. Can you explain what's happening here? This is under expenditure.
Okay, thank you. So what we do is we in terms of our budgeting, we receive the budget from the GEPF of 983.4 million. And versus we have spent 983.4 million versus a total budget of 1,073.3, and which gives us a variance of 8% in terms of how we spent. And that variance, and I'm sure the GPF will attest to it, is a very, very good variance in terms of our budget management. If we look, so the 89.7 million in terms of underspending is most, it has been predominantly under staff and bringing on staff into the organization. So that was the underspending there. But as you can see, that the variance is significantly less, it's only 8%. So we're comfortable with that. The expenditure with regards to contributions, as you can see there, that's what we spent in terms of expenditure of 640.9 billion contributed that from the GEP achieved 5 out of the 8 targets in regards to program 1, as I indicated to you, and the expenditure of 3.2 million contributed to GPTV 11 out of the 7 targets in terms of program 2. So I'm correlating the two that you discussed with me earlier to what we've actually spent in regards to our budget. So if for example, if we look at benefits administration, which is program 2, then we have various targets which we have set in our PPP, which we've tabled to you. And that target varies from client satisfaction, which is the percentage of client satisfied level, percentage of calls answered, National Treasury members admitted within 14 days, GPF members admitted within 14 days, GPF contributions received by the 22nd of the month, National Treasury records maintained within 21 days, visitors that visited our call centers, the amount of benefits we paid out, death benefits paid out within 60 days, National Treasury certificates issued. So those are minute targets agreed to between ourselves and the National Treasury in our service level agreement in which we table in Parliament. And what I provided you here is the budgets that we've used to achieve that and where we've fallen short.
Okay. Make sure that you spend the money as allocated to you. I heard you talking about staff or personnel. If there are vacant posts, can you please fill those vacant posts? This is what we have been emphasizing.
Yeah.
National Treasury and all the entities that report to Treasury. If you remember last time, we received an audit outcome from the Auditor General. The Auditor General was, amongst other concerns, is that National Treasury itself, I think by then there was no Chief Procurement Office and other vacant posts in the NT and entities. It was one of the issues that was thrown back the outcome, audit outcome of entities. So can we make sure that if there are vacant posts, we fill those posts and other related matters so that we spend the money as allocated? Because it's a problem. If money is not spent, come October, and then when we deal with the MTBBS, departments and other entities come to this committee and raise issues even before we go to appropriations that look, this is the budget that you allocate to entities, but they are not spending the money. So we find it very, very difficult to defend the entities and the departments that report to this committee. So let's make sure that we spend money as allocated. We don't underspend and we don't overspend, because there's no money if we overspend. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to give the committee some assurance, we have looked at our vacancy rate, and I've been advised by our HR department that the GPA has a vacancy rate of 10%. It's a moving target, and I'm told it's a healthy vacancy rate. But what we need to do is we need to bring that down, as you indicated. I wish to assure the committee that the Minister and Deputy Minister has taken on board the fact that the executive positions have not been filled, and they are doing everything in their to ensure that that happens. I believe they will be making an announcement in the probably in the next 4 or 5 months on the appointment of the CEO. And so we are on the right track, and we have the political support, because these positions are cabinet positions requiring cabinet approval and under the auspices of the minister. And we've received assurances of that political support. Thank you.
Thanks. I think there's a representative of National Treasury. Is it Mr. Lindile Batho? Or who's the representative of National Treasury? Alan and Tebu.
Comrade Joe, I'm in the meeting. It's Nokwanda. Sorry, I didn't raise my hand.
Nokwanda, you are from the minister's office, isn't it? Who's playing a monitoring role or oversight role over GPI and GPF from Treasury?
I will just find out just to be sure, and I'll just tell you shortly.
Let me answer that. I mean, I'm sure Musa can come in. On over here, I meet with the Deputy Minister on a quarterly basis. I submit a quarterly report to the Deputy Minister on the performance of the GPA. On the performance of the GPA with regards to the National Treasury on special pensions and post-retirement medical benefits, I meet quarterly with the National Treasury in that regard, and we provide detailed reports to them. I also report to the board with regards to the achievements and the performance on a quarterly basis, and I attend board committee meetings. So we are being managed through the legislation and through our accountability lines. As I indicated to you, I report directly to the minister in terms of my performance contract. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, honorable members, for attending this meeting, making contributions. Thanks to the board, the executive of GPA and GEPF, National Treasury, Parliament. Can you make sure that you attend to the issues that have been raised by honorable members? Parliament hold the Treasury and its entities accountable. And when we ask questions here, we expect that in the next appearance, even for the next appearance, members of Parliament have got the right to write questions to you, and you have to respond to those questions. So we might be making follow-up on questions that members have raised in this platform to make sure that the issues that they are concerned with are attended to. So make sure that all the issues that members have raised, you attend to them. These entities, the two of you, are responsible for a very important portfolio, which is pension of the people of South Africa and in the main public servants. So you have got the responsibility to make sure that these entities, GPA and GPF, are administered properly. Thanks very much for what you are doing, and as we have said, including the lowest ranking official in the entity. Make sure that all the vacant posts, Shahid, let's not talk about a healthy, what do you call it? You said 10% is a healthy.
You can see right.
Healthy what?
Vacancy rate.
There's something that is not good in your body. You can't live with that problem. You have to go to the doctor and you get cured. So let's make sure that this time we talk of a 0%. Why we are saying this is because as members of parliament, we, from time to time, have engagement, more especially with young people. There are so many young people who are not employed out there. Every quarter, Status A delivers a labor force survey, and the unemployment rate of young people is ever going up. So I believe out there, there are many young people who are actually qualified in the area in which GPA and GEPF are. Please, we are pleading with you, because Parliament does not create jobs. We are responsible for oversight. Those of you who are in that space, please make sure that all the vacancy rates are filled to make space for young people who are coming out of universities. We're pleading with you, because there are so many young graduates who are unemployed, and also create space for, what do you call it, internships for young people to get experience. Those are the things that we will request you to attend to. Thanks very much for coming to this platform. Until we meet again, thanks, and pass our remarks to the people who are not in this platform, who are working for GPA and GPF and working very hard to make sure that the two entities do take care of the patient of the public servants of this country. Thanks very much. Until we meet again.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Chair.